Okay. The topic today is pretty much recovery. We'll start a little part of recovery, maybe to reinstall a backup. So I'll just do the little bit talk about the database backup first, and then go into more of the details of recovery after that. But first, if we recap from yesterday, database management system, we have the data manager, and data is stored in files. So let's say we have A, B, C, R, and S. And we have to remember that we have the ACID, and here the C is for consistency, and the D is for durability. So those are the challenges we have when it comes to system crashes, when it comes to backup, when it comes to recovery. Because if you think about, let's say we have 20, 40, 80, and we have a transaction here that's reading 20, 40, 80, and you add a little bit of money here, so that one is 110, and that one is 90. We 110 and 90. We get a new, this is still going on, it's not completed. Then we have a new transaction, so T1 here and transaction 2, reading R and S, so this is 100, this is 1000, 100 and 1000. And we move, or we transfer 500. And we commit. So now we commit. This one is okay. This one is in progress. So what are the issues we have when we look at the disk status on the database on the disk? Because that's where we back, that's what we back up. That's what we, if the power goes off, that's what is remaining. This is what the long-term representation of database. But this is the actual state of the database. So what's out on disk is not in sync. That's the problem. And there are two issues. One is for consistency, because here on the disk, we have a version of data that is for a transaction that is still running. So if the power goes off or the disk crashes or anything, then the problem is that the data that was currently written here shouldn't be there, because the previous consistent state was the one that was before we started to modify. So we can't, this is an inconsistent state, so we can't keep that one. And the other problem, so that's one thing, is that we have data written to disk that is not the complete or committed transaction, so it doesn't have a, it's not a consistent state. And the other problem is that this transaction has committed, but the data on the disk doesn't reflect the latest update. So that's where the durability problem comes in. Consistency is when the data manager decides to write something to disk, it's not yet committed. So it's in transaction, it's in progress, and we shouldn't write, we shouldn't handle it as a consistent state, because it's not. The transaction hasn't completed, so we don't know what it's going to do in the end. And as we said, transactions are atomic, so a transaction isn't done, or the output of a transaction is not consistent until the transaction has committed. And the isolation, the I, is what Dipti is going to talk about next week. Just to recap, when you talk about backup, it's not directly relevant, at least not in the beginning. So if you go all the way back to think about, in a database system or in an organization that is running databases, we need data and database administration. The data administration is to focus on the actual data, not the hardware, not the database system, but the data that we store. And the quality of the database system is depending on the quality of data. So we need planning for the database when it comes to the actual data. What are the applications? What are the views? So this is what Dipti talked about in modeling. And we have different users, different views. We need to model data and make sure that the database is covering the needs of the application. And then we have standards, policies, and procedures. Why are these important? Well, because the quality of data will depend on whether everybody is understanding what's supposed to be there. I was once working with the Norwegian Broadcasting, and they had the convention when they describe what's in a TV program. They had the convention of writing the names of persons related to whatever story there was in all capital, if you could see the person in the TV picture, but if it was just related to the story, it would just be regular capitalization. That works if everybody does it this way. But if someone messes up and starts using capital names everywhere or don't use capital letters, the data quality is going downwards, and you can't really query based on the knowledge whether it's upper or lower case. And if you have vocabularies, keywords, users can add keywords. If you don't have a mechanism to control what keywords are accepted, all of a sudden in the keyword list you get to have synonyms, two keywords meaning the same thing, and people don't disagree, and you have the same term in singular and plural forms. So the data quality is degrading unless you have some standards, you have some policies, and you have some procedures. And you need someone, in most cases, we need someone to be the police, to make sure that the policies and standards and procedures are being followed. And then, of course, the conceptual and logical design is something that typically is part of data administration. It has to do with what formats, what data do we have, how are they related, and how is this going to be mapped to a relational model. When it comes to the physical, this is the database administrator. That's where we talk about files and indexes and all these physical things. But the data administration is very much about the quality of the data. The database administration is the management of the physical database. So that's where you have indexes, files, RAID systems, whatever you set up. And here is where security and integrity controls are being set up. Security, we're going to talk about on Friday. And for integrity, you already seen when we have foreign keys, when we have not null, when we have primary keys, and possibly we create some triggers to enforce any integrity rules that we can't express using the primary, foreign key, not null type of constraints. And as I mentioned already, it's also important to look at the system performance, because a database system needs to be quite efficient in its operation, because otherwise people aren't going to use it. Then it's much faster to keep your own files. So if you have to use this database, it's just too slow, then you start using your own files for keeping whatever should be shared. So monitoring and the fine-tuning, making sure that it works nicely. So you may need to replace the disk capacity. You may need to have higher bandwidths. This is all what you go into the tuning. Backups. That's where we're going to end up a little bit later on. We need to run backups regularly. Do you all have a good backup scheme for your files? No. What's the easiest way to back up your files? On the cloud. So use some cloud service and you just put the files there, and then really what you do is that you leave it to the cloud provider, service provider, to do the backup, because they need to have a backup. So now these days it's easier to do backups. There are some stories about backups. You probably have some backup stories yourself, but I had a master's student, a few years ago. He was writing on his thesis throughout the whole spring, supposed to submit in June. And then he took regular backups. He had a CD-ROM writer, so he would take the current version of his thesis and write it to a CD every week. So he had increments, or actually full copies of his thesis. And then, of course, computers crash, and his disk crashed. And he then went to, okay, lucky me, I have the CDs. He's tried to read the first CD, unreadable. Then the second one, unreadable. Then the third one, unreadable. So it turned out that his CD writer hadn't been working all the time. So he had this stack of CDs, he couldn't read any of them. So a little bit of a procedure. If you make a backup, make sure what's on the backup can be read and is good. Because if you have a number of backups, you can't read them, they're not accessible, it doesn't matter. It doesn't help much to have a backup. And the recovery mechanisms and procedures you need in place. So when you have a failure, you need to have a procedure to get the system up and running and make sure that it's in a consistent state. And hardware and software. And you know that for security reasons, that you need to keep hardware and software up to date so that security problems are being patched and you have a system that is performing. And we'll talk about it already today that recovery or durability also means that we need to protect data from other users destroying or other users changing data without the authorization to do so. And I think this is, if you don't know the slide, it was the reference to the old course number here, but this, I talked about this course already yesterday, and I encourage you to get some hands-on. Now, talked about backup. And for you to do a backup, it means that you take the files and you copy them to the cloud, or you copy them to some other medium that you store in a different place than where your original are. If you store all your backups on a CD in the house next to the to your computer and there is a fire, okay, there goes your backup. So you need to think about where do you actually store and how do you make sure that for most likely events it's not going to affect both your computer and the backup. So that's where the cloud is good. Cloud is probably somewhere else than where you are and it's probably well protected. Now, we agree here that there are... Let's say there are two files, one file with the ABC records and one file with RNS records, file one, file two. These are files on the file system, so if I just copy the files, then I'm fine. Or not. So in the database case, can I just copy these files and I have a backup of my database? Too much of space. I mean, we have to assume that we can have room for the files. So nothing to do with space. Typically, backup media have more room than the online or the transactional medium you're running on. The schema. Typically, the schema is part of is in the one the file here because you have a dictionary file. But what? What do we want? We want the database to follow ACID. We want it to be consistent. We want data to be durable. Now, if I back up these files, does it represent the actual state of the database? Is this transaction, results of that transaction, is it stored in the file? No. This transaction that's going on, does it have an impact on the file? Yes, because what you see here is inconsistent because it represents a transaction in action. And here, it doesn't have the data. So if I just backed up these ones, I would back up an inconsistent version of the database. The consistent version is this written to the disk, and the changes here This used to be 40. This used to be 80. This should be 40-80. 40-80. And this should be 600, 500. That's what should be backed up. This is the consistent state. What was actually on the disk is inconsistent and can't be backed up. So yes, you can back up the files, but not if the database is running. So if you stop the database, then everything is going to be flushed. All these things are going to be written to disk. Database is stopped. Nothing's going on. No transactions going on. All the changes are flushed to disk. Then you can back up. And it's inconvenient to stop the database every time you want to do a backup. So keep in mind that when it comes to databases, we can't just do a backup the way we do with regular files. Even though these are files, database files are there in the file system and can be backed up. But the problem is that they don't represent the consistent state. They don't represent the data that we do want to back up, because those are in here. Only the database would know that this transaction is going on. Only the database knows that this, these two elements have been changed. When it comes to backup, we talk about increment backup and full backup. Are you familiar with the terms? Some of you? So, and here comes space consideration. Because if you do full backup, it means that you have your files here, F1, F2, and every time, let's assume for now that you're just into a kind of a tape or whatever. At regular intervals, you do write a backup, so then you have F1 at date 1, and you have F2 at date 2, and you have F1 at date 2, F2 at date 2. So every time you write the complete file as it is at the time of backup. Which means that if this file hasn't changed from here to here, you're still going to write it. If you have changed three words in this file, you're going to rewrite the whole file. So typically, you produce large files, and it takes time to write that file, long file. And if a lot of the files haven't changed, or just small parts of it, you are wasting quite a lot of time. That's where the incremental comes in. So rather than restoring the whole file, you do the delta. What has changed since that time? And if you use Git, you know that's in Git you can always find deltas, even though that stores the whole file every time. You can store the deltas, you could find what are the differences, and that's really what you want to store here, are just the differences. So F1, F2, delta, F2. So if files don't change a lot at time 3, and delta F2 at time 3, and then you may have a new file, F3, and then, of course, the new files, you need to write them completely. But you just deal with the differences, and you store just the differences. So, of course, these files are much smaller, because you don't store whatever is overlapping between versions of files. And it's quick to write the file. If you can quickly find the differences, then it's quick to generate, because you just write the file. You don't have to write everything. You just write the changes. There's less to write. And the disadvantage is if you want to restore. Because if you want to restore, you can't just read the latest version of the file. If you had the full backup, you could just find the latest version and just write it back. But in this case, this one is fine. You can write F3 back, F2. Now you have to apply the deltas from time 3 to deltas from time 2 to the file. and then we could write it to the disk. So you had to chain backwards and reapply the deltas on top of the previous delta and back to on top of the file. And then you have the files as they were at the time of the crash. So to recreate the file, it's faster to have full backup, but the full backup takes more space and takes more time to write. So the full backup, we don't want to do it too frequently. But we don't want too many increments either, because then if you have a crash, you need to go very far back to regenerate the files. There's a lot of work to regenerate the files. So we need to find a balance between doing a full backup and doing incremental backup. So typically, that mix is best. Let's say you do once a week, you do a full backup, and then you do increments either once a day or maybe several times a day, depending on how much you can afford. Because remember, if you have a disk crash here, whatever has changed on file 1 and 2 will be lost. If you reinsert the backup, then changes that you have done since the previous backup will be lost. I don't know if you have any of you had experienced backup being put back? You have. So, for instance, if you have email and there is a crash on the mail server, then you may have lost 2 days of mail. If you mail that you haven't been reading, that's on the server. So the backup was 2 days old. So it's a question of finding the right frequency, and that depends a little bit on how much, how important the data is, how well you can live with the lost data and how to redo some work. So you have to find that balance between the full backup and the increments. And what these numbers are, how often you do one or the other, it depends on how much data change and also how important the up-to-date value will be. And this will be for the files. Now, for the database, we can't afford data disappearing. So for the database, we still have other mechanisms that will make sure that even if the database crashes, we can regenerate the database as was without having backups that are complete. But again, what the database has is kind of an incremental backup, so that's why we like to have the incremental backup on top of some file backup, so you don't have to go very far back in the log for backing up or for reinsetting the database. Just to give you some practical example, MySQL has something called the hot backup, and that is a mechanism. So if we remember the picture here, should not delete it, we have the data manager with A, B, and C, and R, and S, and the hot backup. Then the database knows that B and C were modified but shouldn't have been. So you can, when you back up, you say, okay, for B and C, we can use the previous values, not the new ones. But for R and S, when we back up, we need to back up the new values. So this was 600 and this was 500. So these are the ones we back up. But here, the ones we had 20, and this was it 110 and 90? Some values. But these, the original ones, were 40 and 80. So when we back up 40 and 80, and we back up 600 and 500, if they have been changed since the last backup, because typically this is an incremental backup. But for that, we need mechanisms in the database management system. Because that's the only one, database management system is the one component here that knows what is the consistent state of the database. So I can't back up these files, but I can tell the database to run a backup and make sure that the proper versions of the files are being backed up. It's also possible to do a MySQL dump, and then you can dump all the database files as SQL statements, and later on you can import the database. So that's another, and MySQL dump will then make sure that what you dump is a consistent state of the database. And as I said, and we said, it is possible to back up these files, the database files, when the database is stopped. So if you really want to do a hard backup, then you stop the database and make sure that tables are locked so no one can read, no one can write, and then you flush the buffers, and then you can back up the files, as long as the database has stopped accepting more transactions, and make sure that it all that it has in memory is written to disk, then we are okay. But it needs, of course, then to let the ongoing transactions complete first. So that's doable, but you have to have a certain procedure in place for that to be safe to do or to be consistent. And there's something called the binary log that you can use for incremental backups. As we saw from service architecture operations course, backup is one of the things that you're going to be drilling. So if you do the course in the spring, you're going to be looking at various backup procedures, mechanisms, routines, how to do that, and set it up so that you get the right... Because a backup takes resources, and if you need to stop the database, of course, it means that for some time you don't accept regular requests and traffic. So it needs to be scheduled properly so that we don't spend too much resources, but at the same time, we spend enough resources that we can recover data if something happens. Yeah, so if you want to, you can go and read the MySQL manual. For us, the most important message here is the message that we cannot trust what's on the files. If the database is running, we can't trust what's in the files because the database management system decides what it's going to write and when to the file. When the database has stopped, fine, files consist what we need. But as the database is running, what we have on the files will usually not represent consistent state of the database. So that's the important message here. So that's why we may need the special tools for database backup in most cases, because we can't just stop the database. I mean, if you have MySQL running on your own computer and you have it for your own applications, you want to do a backup, just stop MySQL, take a copy of the MySQL data directory with all the files, and then you're fine. Maybe a better way is to do MySQL dump all the files into SQL, because then you have the advantage that if you want to import the data in a newer version of MySQL, you don't have to worry about whether the files are the same format as they used to be. Then you could just run an import on the SQL. So it might be as well just run the dump of the database into SQL files. Okay, that was the database administration part. Now, what we're going to do for the rest of the day is to talk about the recovery, meaning we need to make sure that after a crash, the database comes up in a consistent state and where all the data that was committed previously is restored into the database. So we'll talk about how this is done, and this is to most databases done through the use of a log file. So we have a log file, and we're going to talk about the log file and what operations are being done on the log file, what we store, and how we use the log file to restore data after or to recover data after a crash. Because, as we said, if this one crashes, then here, let's do A, B, and C, we have 20, and then we wrote 110 and 90, which is inconsistent, and for R and S, we have 100, and we have 1,000, which was the old state. So when the system crashes, this is what's on the disk before we can start the database or accepting more queries, more operations on the database, we need to put it back into the state of the new, which it should be 600 and 500, because that was the last successful transaction. And this one needs to be back to 40 and 80, because that was the last commit, was 4080. So when we start the system, we have the existing files. We need to use the log file to try to figure out what happened and go back to that state. Why do we need this? Well, if we don't need to have a disk crash, there are different things that may happen. And for different things that happen, we have different mechanisms. So here, if the power goes off and we don't have any extra power supply, then whatever is in memory is going to be lost. And then this is the only remaining data we have. And we then need to we need some other storage, some other representation of this data so that we can, because if it's just in memory, we can't recover. So it needs to be stored somewhere else, either in some other online running system or on a file somehow, because we need to set this back. But there may be the other problem, is that this disk is gone. So it crashes, there's a fire, and the disk crashes. Then we need backups to recover this. And then possibly on top of the backup, we need to rerun all these transactions that had happened, that had successfully committed since last time we had, or since we took the backup. So what we need to do depends on what actually happened to our database. And in the database literature, we talk about stable storage. And stable storage means that we can trust that this data is permanent. So storing on one disk is obviously not so stable, because if it crashes, data is gone. Store them on two disks, well, it depends on whether they are totally independent, because if the two disks are in the same room and that room is starts to burn, you have a fire there, then it doesn't help. So stable storage means that it's been replicated in several non-volatile storage media, meaning that if the power goes off, they will still be there, with independent failure modes. And now this is tricky. So how far would we want to go there for independent? So if there was an atomic bomb here, then okay, that bomb, if that may have an impact on pretty large area. So what really independent failure mode can be a bit tricky to define. But if you keep it at home and you have it on the cloud, then you can assume that the cloud is pretty much has an independent failure mode from your house. Because if there's a earthquake or a fire or flooding or anything in your house, then most likely that's not going to affect the cloud service. Because inside the cloud server provider, they already have data stored. Maybe they have multiple places in Norway or in the world, or at least they have it inside the mountain, well protected environmentally. So they try to make sure that they are independent. So there's no one single problem that will cause several of the or all of these storage media to fail at the same time. That's your objective. So what are the physical causes? We have system crashes. How many have experienced a disk crash? Okay, around 30-40%. So that happens. I mean, disks, they live for 3-4 years and then they crash. So that's media failures. System crashes is typically when RAM breaks or the fan goes, something happens. And then, of course, you have the physical disasters. You have flooding, you have earthquakes, you have fires. That can be the physical causes. But then, you have the human errors, like the Telenor example I was giving yesterday, when they just deleted the whole customer database. There might be problems in the application software. Bugs that start deleting data. Data might be destructed by someone being careless. Let's hope that was the case in Telenor. There might be a sabotage. Someone is actually, and that's going to talk about on Friday, and hacking and how you can go in and deliberately try to destroy data. And for each of these, as you probably understand, for each of these, you may be different mechanisms. Because if just the power goes, then you have all the data, hopefully, in some other in-house disks. But now, if the whole place is burned down, you need very different mechanisms. So, given how we defined stable storage, is a RAID, you remember RAID, where you have, let's say, 4 disks in one system, and it's an array of independent disks, was kind of the first definition, or the abbreviation RAID. So these are independent. Is that stable storage? Assuming this definition, independent failure modes. No, it's not. Because if you throw that box down the stairs, all disks go, not just the one, all disks. So they are, but they are important part of stable storage, because they will internally deal with some problems, but then you need to replicate across more RAID systems or other solutions so that you get that extra on top of what the RAID provides you. So this is the database transaction system that we saw yesterday as well. So the transaction manager is the one that starts transactions and controls operations in the transaction. It deals with the scheduler, which decides in what order operations are actually going to be done on the disk. Recovery manager, this is the one we're going to talk about now. So the recovery manager needs to know all the operations, because the recovery manager is the one that keeps the log file. So it needs to know what's going to be logged, and that's why whatever the scheduler does, the recovery manager adds the operation to the log, so it has a complete picture of what happened and what didn't happen. The buffer manager then can cache data, store it to the file system, and keep it there for persistently there. And as we said, the issue here, or one of the issues here, is caused by the fact that the data manager and the file system independently decides when is a good time to write to disk. Because we want to have high performance, which means that when the user changes something, we don't necessarily write to the disk immediately. You may stack up changes, and you may write them to disk in the order where the disk head is. You remember the disk head moves back and forth. You would like to use optimal use of the disk. So rather than take them in the order things are modified, you take them in the order of where the disk head is. We don't know exactly when the system decides to write it to disk. It will write on a regular basis, because it needs to use this memory for other purposes. And if you never write a disk, there is a lot of things to read from the disk file. So it's trying to write to the disk regularly so that completed transactions are written to disk and you don't have to keep them in memory, you don't have to worry about recovering them. But in general, we don't know exactly what time is. So that's why we need to have these mechanisms to undo what has been written too early to disk, and we need to redo what should have been written to disk but wasn't written. So those are the two operations we're going to talk about, undo and redo. Typically, an application may request a flush. I don't know if you have been doing that in your software, but in file system APIs, you have often the possibility to flush files to make sure that they are written directly to the disk, so you don't have to deal with just the the changes in memory. You can also have them on disk. I think we'll make the break there, because then we're going to go into the mechanism. So let's make a break here, and I think we'll meet again quarter past. A little bit longer break. Yes. So if you go back to the ACID, so when I say a transaction represents the basic unit of recovery, it's because transactions are atomic. So during recovery, we need to make sure that they are atomic. So whatever transactions were started, we need to remove them, because otherwise we're not going to be able to deal with or have it in a consistent state. So to have it consistent, we need to make sure that transactions that were partly executed will have to be undone. And then for durability, we need to make sure that whatever was committed has been written to disk, to stable storage. Otherwise, they will be lost, and that's we wouldn't have the ACID property. Now, for the isolation, that's the responsibility of the scheduler. If you remember, the transaction manager sends messages to the scheduler, and the scheduler is the one that makes sure that two users don't interfere with the operations of each other. That's what Dipti is going to talk about on Tuesday. So, depending now on what time problems happen, we may need the backup if the disk has crashed. But if the system stopped as it was running transactions, doing transactions, that's what we need to look at now. That's where we have these mechanisms for using the log file for creating a consistent state after a crash. So this is typically where the power goes off and we still have the disk. So we're going to recover database based from what we have on disk plus whatever we have been logging in addition. So it's not like the disk is burned, then we don't have this. So now we assume the disk is there. It's just that the system stopped in the middle of handling transactions, and we need to get it back in a consistent state. So as we did before, it means that in memory, we may have versions of data that is not what they should be on the disk. It's not what they are on the disk and not what they should be on the disk. So depending on what the problem is, we have these two operations of redo. And redo is what we need to do if a transaction was committed but not written to disk. Do we need to redo it again so that it gets written to disk? And undo is if the transaction had not committed before this power goes off. So it means that you have been writing data to disk that shouldn't be stored. And then we need to undo them. So the two operations are redo, meaning that we have updated version of data in memory, which has not been written to disk, and we need to redo the writing. And if we have a transaction that was running by the time the system crashed, we need to undo whatever changes it did to the file system. We are rolling back to a previous state. So these are the two operations, and typically when the system crashes, we may have to do both. We may have to redo for those transactions that committed but weren't written completely to the file system, and we may need to undo the ones that have started to write to the file system but have had not yet been completed. So this is an example from the books. Let's say that we have a transaction T1 going to run for, this is the time of failure, so T1 is running at time of failure. T2 was running but it's completed. T3 is completed. T4 is completed, T5 is completed, and T6 is running by the time of crash. And if you assume that data is in memory for all transactions, and then some data may have been written to disk, not all, but some of it may have been written to disk. What do we need to do? Well, T1 and T6 are clearly still running at this time, and whatever changes they did to the database needs to be undone. As you saw before, if you want to modify the ABC I had before, and then the power goes off before it's done. We don't know what it was supposed to do, so it's not consistent state. So we need to undo. But for T2, 3, 4, and 5, and 6, they're all completed before the time of the failure. And we need to make sure that when we start the system, that they are all buffers involved that these transactions operate on are written to disk. So that we have all their changes on the disk. So when the system starts, because what's going to happen is that the system's going to read these files and let the users operate, and we need to make sure that what it has in memory will be what it was in memory as a consistent state before the database crashed. So we have to undo the running ones and redo the ones that are committed before the time of the crash. This C line here, we're going to come back to it. It has to do with checkpointing, and I will talk about checkpointing a little later. But what we need to think of now is how the database system can make sure that the changes that it does can be rolled forward in the case of a committed transaction, or rolled back in the case of a running transaction at the time of the crash. So the log file. I have put up a short header for a log file. There's an example a bit later on. Log file, you need to know the transactions. So transaction IDs are here. You need to know what operation the transaction caused, what object it operated on, for instance, changing the value, deleting a value. We typically have a before and after image. What that means is that we know the value of, if this is a field like this B, we have the value of the B before it was operated, before it was modified, and after. So we have both values. We'll show in a while why I need that. And then we have two pointers, one to the next operation that the same transaction has been doing, and one to the previous one, so that we have chained transaction operations. It's easy, once we find one, it's easy to go back in the log to the other ones for the other operations that the same transaction initiated. I'll show you in a second how that can be used. So, in addition to these transaction records that are typically start a transaction, end a transaction, modify some value, we also have checkpoint records. We're going to come back to checkpoint later on, but the log may also say it will also include the time when it was checkpointed or last checkpoint. I didn't include a time here, so typically you will also want to know at what time these operations were. So typically a time column, but my board was a bit too narrow to fit all that. So what the idea here is that when the database crashes, then these data are inconsistent, and then we use the log file to go back and see what happened, and then correct the changes based on the data in the log file. What does this mean? Well, this means that the log file is a critical component, because we need to write to the log file. If you haven't been writing to the log file, you have nothing to recover. So we need to write to the log file. So all transactions, all operations need to write to the log file. So the transaction manager is constantly adding to the log file. And if there are many transactions, of course, then writing to the log file may be a factor that slows down the system. So we need to make sure that the writing to a log file is efficiently done, and the files that it's using has a low response time. But at the same time, we need the log file data, because if the log file is gone, we aren't able to recreate the database after a crash. Now, let's go through this example. So I've been writing in the database. We have A, B, C, and D, E, F stored on disk. I put the numbers in the memory as well, but that's basically what's going to happen here, is that we have a transaction T1 that is transferring 50 euro from B and another 50 from C to increase the value of A. So we have read A, B, and C, And the first operation will be, it depends on how things are implemented. But let's now say that we start by transferring 50 from B to C. So this one is decreased 1950. And this one is reduced to 1950. This one is increased then to 60. So transaction one, it has a start. And this is 0, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14. These are the line numbers. So this one is the first one, so it doesn't have a previous one. And the next one is operation is update. I'm going to update B. Before was 2000. New is 1950. The previous pointer was 0. And that means the next pointer here is 1. And then next is that transaction 1 updated A. Before was 10, new is 60, previous was 1, that means that next one here is 2. Now, at the same time, transaction 2 is adding 5% to D, E, and F. So 5%, so that means 315, that means 105, that means 210. So transaction 2 starts and doesn't have any previous operation. Transaction 2 is updating. Just to update. And it's updating D. Before was 300. New is 315. Was no previous pointer. Yes, previous pointer was 3. 2, update. E used to be 100 is 105 and 4, and now this is 4. Next here is transaction 2 updating F, and then the used to be 200, now it's 210. That was line number 5, meaning this is line number 5. Next one is we take another 50 here. Let's see, from this should be 500, sorry. This should be 500. Another 50 here, so this one should be 450. And this one should be 110. We transfer 50 here. So transaction 1, another update. It's transferring. Let's see, from C, used to be 500, now it's 450. Then transaction, and then the previous transaction 1 was line number 2, and this next is number 7. Start, next one was here, number, sorry, 3, next one is 4. This should be, next one is 5, sorry. Previously 4, next one is 6. Next one is 2, 7. And then this one, next one is, this one on line 8. Sorry. Yeah, next one here we don't know. 2. That was a commit, and the previous operation for 2 was line number 6, and then an 8. Okay. If the system crashes here, now let's go see. Okay, so the T1 was completely done. Okay, I did the opposite here. I did the T2. Completely done. Okay, this is a bit opposite of what we have here. But assume that this is what we have, and assume that we have written these values, A, 110, 1950, and 450. No, sorry, 60, because it hadn't updated. This one hadn't been done yet. This was just 60, we had just reduced this one. But none of these were written. Let's do that case. Transaction T2, is completed. It has a commit, but none of the data has been written to the file. T1 was not committed. It had done changes to the file for B and C, but it wasn't committed. Are we on this? I misread this one, so I'm a little bit off here. But the example is close, just a little bit reversed. We are okay with that? So now what we need to do is we need to undo T1 because it was running at the time of the crash. And we need to redo T2 because it was a commit. So the way this works is that we start in the log file from the back. So reading the log file from the end, and we find that, okay, there was a transaction 2, and transaction 2 was committed, which means that I need to find the values it should be. So what I can do here is I go to the previous pointer, so this is 6, go to the previous pointer, 5, previous pointer 4, previous pointer 3, that's the start. So that's the start of the operation or the transaction. I want to redo it. So what I do now is I play all the updates. I say, okay, this should be, I'm going to use the after image because that's what was set. So this is going to be 315. I want to use the after image. So this is going to be 105. I want to use the after image. This is going to be 210. That's commit. So now I've redone that transaction. Okay, so I go up to the next one. This one is transaction number 1. Transaction number 1 was not committed, so I need to undo. And in this case, I undo backwards because I may have updated the same element several times, so I need the first value. In the redo, I need to do them in the order they were done so that I make sure that the last value is remaining. But for undoing, I need to go backwards to undo them one by one to get to the initial. So I need to say this one should be 500. I need to put back the before image, 500. And the previous one was on line number 2. And I need to put back 10 for A. And the previous one's 1. And I need to put back 2,000 for B. And that's the start. So I'm done. It's redone. So undo happens in the reverse order. Redo happens in the... So that's why we have these pointers. So it's easy from here to go to the first one. Now what I need to do now is to continue scanning the file, the log file, backwards, and find where there are other transactions. Because now I've undid 1 and I redid 2, but there might be other transactions. I need to go on. And how long do I need to go on? To the beginning of the file, because I don't know at what time a transaction was ended. That's why we have checkpointing. So here, what we can see we have a transaction ID because we need to know and need to be able to find what transactions each operation was linked to, because transactions are the units of operation here. And for each transaction, we need to look for whether it was commit or in operation. We need to know what type. So we have start, update, commit, possibly checkpoint, abort. And we need to know what data was modified. We need to know the old and new values, so that it's easy to set back the previous value, and possibly some log management information. Here is previous and next pointers, and there's some other information that we may want to include in here for managing the log itself. Yeah. This is for the example in the textbook, but we have our own here. So, and you see here they also have the time information. Might be useful to keep a timer for operations. But what's important for us is the order, because we need to do the operations in reverse order when we undo, and in the natural order or on the sorted order when we redo. So here comes checkpointing. The problem is that this log file is running and running and running, or we are just adding and adding and adding, and the more transactions are committed, the more they are back there. And when we do recovery, we don't know how far back we need to go to make sure that the transaction was properly written to the file. So that's where checkpointing comes in. So in checkpointing, we actually flush everything to the file. And what we also do is that we also, when we do checkpoint, so let's say we had that checkpoint here at -1. So you have, there's no transaction ID, it's a checkpoint. Then what you want to do is to say, what were the active transactions at that time? And there were no transactions active at the time. But if there were active transactions, we can list them. Because what we know then, at checkpoint time, everything is written to the file system. So in our checkpoint, all buffers are written. So we know that at checkpoint time, the buffers were all up to date. And what does that mean? It means that all transactions that started before the checkpoint time has been written to the disk. So we don't have to worry about them. So when we find a checkpoint, we find the list of active transactions. So let's say we have a checkpoint down here, checkpoint, and we have transaction 1, transaction 2. Transaction 2 was not active. Let's say we start a new transaction 3. So here we have 3 start. If you do a checkpoint here, and we say that transaction 1 and 3 are running, it means that we are okay with 2 committing here. We don't need to redo it, because we know that the checkpoint, so all these buffers were written to the disk at checkpoint time. You see that? So checkpoint time means that we can stop searching for other than these two. These two, we need to go to the very beginning of these two, because these were running, and these we need to undo. So the ones that are listed as active transactions here, we need to go back in the log to the start for each one of them. But for the other ones, we don't need to, because they were committed and they were written to disk, and we know that they are stored on disk. You don't need to redo anything before checkpoint time. We only need to redo the transactions that were committed after the checkpoint time. Was that understandable? So it would mean that we don't have to scan through the whole log file. Otherwise, we had to do that. Worst case, we don't know if the first committed transaction is actually written to the disk or not. But with checkpointing, we do know. We know the exact time, and we know what transactions were there. So at that point, we know what the active transactions are. So these are the only ones we need to worry about, and we need to undo them, possibly. So this is what we did. We go from the end, and we redo them in the order, or by going to the beginning, and redo all the operations by putting in the after image. And for the undo, we go in reverse order, and we put in the before image. That's what it was before the transaction did the new operation on it. And then with this checkpoint, we don't have to worry about T2 and T3, because they have been written to disk at the checkpoint time. But T4 and T5, they need to be, they were active at the time. T4 and T5 were active at the time, so they need to be redone. And T1 was also active, but it's not completed, so it needs to be undone. And T6 has started afterwards and didn't commit, so it needs to be undone as well. So that's how we interact with the log and the checkpoint entries and the other entries in the log to understand what we need to do, and how we put it all back. This is clear? Okay. Now, why wouldn't we just write everything to the database in the first place? I mean, wouldn't it be faster to just, I mean, if we could flush everything, so every time there's a write, we could just write it to disk, we didn't have to redo, wouldn't that be faster? Depending on the data structure. I mean, the log file is obviously going to be a heap file. You just need to log at the very end. We just need to add it at the very end. But if you look at the other values, they may be in a B tree, because it might be the primary key, or might be an index key, so they might be in the B tree, and they're also in the data file with random access. So we need to seek with a log file. You could typically just... It's sequential, so you can read larger parts of it, and you can write larger parts sequentially. So it's much faster to read and write log file than a random entry. So, and it needs to be, because otherwise this wouldn't work. So we needed the log operations to be fast, so that we can do many operations at the and write it to the log. So we need to undo the changes, and there is no need for backup files in this case, because we have everything either on the log or on the disk, and those two together we can recreate everything by just restoring the database using the before and after images. Now, if the disk was crashed in addition, so if we have a disk crash in addition, then we also need to bring up the latest copy. So we bring up the latest copy of the database, and now comes timing, because from the latest copy of the database we can find the latest update, and now we need to go back in the log file to the point of the previous crash, because the log file, you will have log files including the all transactions after the last backup. So you can use a log file to get back to the position or to the state of the database at the time of the crash or at the time of the backup. So in this case, we need to go further back. We need to go past the checkpoints. We need to go back to the time where the backup was created. So that's as much we need to redo. So we get the backup in, and then we reapply all these transactions using the transaction log from the time of the backup, and then we have a database that's consistent. So it's less work when we do have the disk, because then we have everything since the last checkpoint. If we don't, then we need to bring in the last backup, and then we need to go back in the log file till the time of that backup. So if you use the backup tool, then most likely there will also be backup records here in the logs. You know at what time there were backups. You can go back to the exact know what transactions were active at the time, or what state you had at the backup time. So you can go back to this state. In actually doing this, there are three main ways. I mean, this the one we talked about now is. There are variants of it in terms of what we need to do and at what time and how we control it. So the deferred update is pretty much write continuously to the log, but the database files are only updated after a commit. Because we had to, you remember from this case, we had to undo T1. And why did they have to undo T1? Because T1 data was written to disk before it committed. If you do the deferred update, it means that we won't store any data for a transaction until it commits. At the time it commits, we write it to the... So when you request a commit, we write all data to disk and we write the before we accept the commit or the acknowledge or commit, so we know that it's all been written to the log. So we know that we have it written to log and also to the database after commit. So there is no undo need. We just need to redo the ones that were not written to disk. We're not going to write anything here until a commit. After commit, we may write, we may delay the writing a little bit depending on what the data manager decides to. Makes it easier because we don't have to worry about undoing all the ongoing transactions. Immediate is what we were kind of describing. So we write immediately to the disk. And for that, it is important that we write to the log before we write to disk. It's called write ahead. Why is that important? We need to write the log before we write to the disk. Yeah, because if, as I was saying, if there's a crash between you've been writing to disk and now you write to log, then we don't know what the before image was. The before image, we need the before image. And it opposite doesn't matter, opposite, because when we write back the before image, we don't care whether it's 2000 and 1950. We don't care what value it is. We're just going to put this one back. But we need to know it. And we can't change anything on the disk before it's written to the log. So we need to redo. And we may need to undo. So this is the case that we discussed here, was the immediate one. We need to go through and do the redo, do the undo. And in this case, there is we definitely need the write ahead log, which means that we have everything in the log. We know in the log what it should be, and then we can put back the before images as we want them to. And again, undo, we need to do them in reverse order to make sure that the first before image of each. Because if I modify here, if I modify B again, then the before image will be 1950 here, but the correct at the start of the transaction was the first before image. So if you have multiple before images, we need to get the first one. That's why we do it in reverse order. The next one is called shadow paging, and that one is more interesting. If you have you had operating systems yet? No. So because you also use paging and possibly using shadow paging there as well. But let's go back to where we started. So we had 10, we had 2,000, we had 500. We have 300, 100, and 200. So in the shadow paging case, we double up on a disk. We double up all data elements. So we have two copies of all data. So, and we have a pointer that says which one of the two would be the current and which would be the shadow. So we're starting by having copies, and we don't care what's in the shadow, some value, because what's going to happen is that when we start a transaction, so we're going to read 10, 2,000, 500, and when we start, then the shadow will be 10, 2,500. Now, when we start modifying, so we started to increase this in 50, we reduced this to 1950. So if that's the, and then we reduced this to 450, but we hadn't yet put in extra here. So we had done everything but increasing A, and for here we increased this with 315, 105, 210, and here in the shadow we have 315, we have 105, we have 210. Then there is a commit, and on commit what we say is, okay, now this is the current and this is the shadow. So now what we have on disk is this. Power goes off, this is the current, and that's fine, because the current, we don't worry about the shadow. The shadow in this case, we can just ignore it. See the point? The changes were done to the shadow, which is fine. So after a crash, it's okay, because current is up to date. I mean, we had a new current here, and in this case, we kept the old current. So this log file, the before and after images, our values are actually stored. The before and after image is actually stored inside the database itself. So in this case, you don't have to worry about the log file in the same way. We'll still want to have a log file in the case of disk crashes. For disk crash, you need the log file on top of the previous backup. But for memory crashes, we can just start the database and it's up and running, because the current record will be the right one. Because we're not going to set this want to be the current until the operation is done. So when we now complete and say this one is 450, this one is 9050, this one is 110, when we write 110 here and say commit, then we make this the current and this is the shadow, and then this is the updated one. So we can by just keeping in memory, we can deal with in memory failures without going to the log file. You follow that? You just have two copies, and one is the shadow, and you can change the shadow as much as you want, because it's just a shadow. And when we commit, we just make it a current. Question? Yeah, we do the double disk space. Yes. So that's always the case. I mean, the bigger disks doesn't matter, because you always have the question: are you going to spend more time to process, or more disk space, or more space? So processing time versus space, because recovering would take longer if you need to go from the log file. Recovery here is quick. So if time is more important than disk space, then you go for this one. If you can't afford duplicating all data, but you could you can handle a little bit longer recovery time, then you go for this one. So that's why we have courses on operations database, because you have so many alternatives, and it's not that one is always the correct one. Which one works better, which one you go for, depends on the characteristics of your application and requirements. But definitely you're going to waste here, you're going to have double up everything. That's how it works. Yeah, I did mess up a bit of the current of the shadow here, but anyway, so the point is that you have an updated version. So I think in this one, the C and the SS would be the opposite of what I put up here. But the idea is that whatever point in time, you know, the one is the consistent value and the other one is the one that you're working on. And at the end of the transaction, you just make the current one, the one that's the one that you're going to be using. Yeah, and you can restore for that's right. You can restore it for the ones that on failure. Now, if we were to look at the completeness here, so we need the logs to know what changes have been done to the database, either to recover from system or for power and volatile memory, or we need to keep it and we need it on top of a backup if we have a disk crash. So we need to recreate whatever transaction, because remember durability, means that when we put back a backup, we can't lose all the transactions that happened since last backup. So we need a log for all operations. And we need to make sure that the log file is safe and always available. Checkpoints. We put in checkpoints to make sure that we don't have to go back to the very beginning of the log file to reinsert a value. We just have to go to the last checkpoint and undo the active transactions at that point the time. That's the only thing we need to do, and after that we can stop. And we have backup for restoring data if the disk data is lost. The log file will only help us on top of some disk data, either from the backup or from the actual disk. So, this is what you need to know for this course, transactions. And we're going to talk more about transactions and concurrent use and interoperation between users next week. The buffer management, you need to understand that the buffer management is under control of the database management system and is trying to make optimal use of the disk. It doesn't care about transactions, whether they're committed or not. It only cares about the usage and the how efficient you can store and read data. The two basic operations, undo for removing the effects of transactions that weren't completed, because otherwise we wouldn't have consistency, and redo to be able to write back the results of committed transactions, and that's the durability. And use the log file, and consider this log file as an abstract thing, because the different database systems will have different details, implementations. But you should be able to describe the general content, like it needs a transaction ID, because you need to know what transactions modified, you need to know what was happening, you need to know the before and after values, and you need to know what was changed. This other stuff, you don't have to worry so much about that, but you need to know these things and know that that's in the database so that you can explain how it's being recreated and possible different backup schemes. That is pretty much what we're going to be doing on recovery and backup. On Friday, we're going to talk about security, both when it comes to securing applications, but also what mechanisms you have in the database for restricting operations access and dealing with users and privileges. Okay. Then we'll meet on Friday.